Mahundle Rackus, and you're listening to the WoW Ringcast.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
For the Horde.
Welcome, listeners. This is your host, Shroomy Boomy of Earthen Ring US, and as always, we are joined by Tanking Extraordinaire, Arion of Frostmane US. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Also, we are joined by the Dashing Warrior Kung Pao Panda of Earthen Ring US.
Dashing, huh? I like it.
And we are very fortunate to hopefully be joined by a couple of Arion's raiders from over on the Frostmane server. They have completed some hard mode bosses these last couple of weeks and are very eager to hear how their progression has gone. They'll be able to detail some fights for us and, well, hopefully make the podcast very entertaining. Welcome, gentlemen. Glad to have you back.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Good to be here.
All right, so first of all, I want to clarify some things on our last podcast. We discussed a lot of PTR stuff, and as I went through it, I kind of went back and listened to the podcast. Some of the things were, I'm not going to say sketchy or unclear, but first of all, I want to say the things we discussed were PTR. None of it is defined as going into the game, so if you took what we said as being literal, I hope not, because anyone who knows anything about the PTR knows that this is all subject to change. Now, we've been discussing Vengeance off air a little bit, and we're gonna go back and earn that, but I want to discuss also, I had brought up the, not glyph, but the enchanting changes, how the enchants were going to be able to be applied to older gear. It would scale down, and you would have those extra abilities or those extra stats. And I think I explained it in a way that maybe if you had listened to this and you didn't understand, that you would have a cattle level enchant applied to, say, like a level one piece of gear, you wouldn't have those kata stats. It would scale up. So if you put it on a level one piece of gear, it would have the appropriate stats for that gear and then scale up as the gear scaled with your character for, say, like the BOA gear. Just want to be sure that everyone understood that that is more or less what I meant, but I don't think that's what I said. Also, when I think we had discussed a little bit about tier set gear. The tier set gear is still very much up in the air as far as Blizzard goes. They're probably going to tweak a lot of those tier sets. So if we said something inaccurately, don't take that to heart. That will most certainly be adjusted, I'm very sure. And we had also discussed how Vengeance, going back to Vengeance, was probably going to make tanks very, very OP to the point where maybe DPS wouldn't matter so much because tanks, the Vengeance stacks were just going to get out of control. But there's going to be some adjustments to Vengeance, and anyone who's been looking at the PTR and the adjustments to that is probably looking at that and thinking, well, Vengeance has taken a massive nerf. Arion, if you could touch on that a little bit, just to kind of put it in perspective for people who maybe don't even understand how Vengeance works.
All right, so basically, Vengeance is the additional attack power that a tank receives from taking damage. Basically, a boss hits you, and based on the amount of damage that you took from that boss's hit, you are given attack power to help you keep your threat generation high enough to contend with the DPS pulling aggro from you. The way threat works, 1 point of damage equals 1 point of threat. And when a tank deals damage, a tank gets 5 points of threat, so a tank basically has to deal enough damage that the DPS don't over-generate their threat and then pull aggro. I'm sure people have heard, oh my god, watch your threat, things like that. Vengeance is the way to compensate tanks for, as a tank gets better gear, he takes less damage, but he doesn't deal more damage. So he's dealing less damage at better gear levels. DPS deal more damage at better gear levels. DPS are more prone to pull threat at higher gear levels, so Vengeance was the way to make, as a tank gets better, he doesn't lose his damage output. He still has it. He still has a way to generate enough damage to keep the boss focused on him. The current way Vengeance works is Vengeance is capped at 100% of your HP, which means if you have 500,000 HP on your tank can't get more than cannot get more than 500,000 extra attack power. The changes coming in 5.4 change it so that Vengeance has a cap of 30% of your maximum health if you're in a 10-man raid, and 50% of your maximum health when you're in a 25-man raid. 25-man raid having the higher cap due to just more damage going in, as well as DPS tends to be higher in 25-man raids due to more buffs, more access to things like Stormlash Totem, everything like that. The change people think it's going to be the end all their problems with a tank beating them on damage and going to bring tanks back in line on where they should be. Realistically, I've never gone above about 40% of my HP in Vengeance, and I'm usually second or third on the meters. I know other tanks that feel the same way. The difference where you're going to see the biggest change is in the 25-man hard mode guilds when they attempt to do things like one-tanking Darumu. Basically, that strat relies on the fact that you dropping that extra tank makes the single tank have so much Vengeance that he's doing the damage of three players. Things like that are going to go away. But for the majority of people and the majority of raiding guilds that aren't on the bleeding edge, pushing those realm first, server first, region first, and even world first, we're not going to see a big difference. Your tank might be a little bit lower on the damage meters because of the cap, but all in all, the changes are just to fix the outliers of, yeah, my tank has 700,000 Vengeance. Every time he uses Shield Slam, his Shield Slam hits for 2.7 million. We fix those, bring those back more in line, and then everybody else kind of stays the same. Maybe we go down a little bit, but overall, the nerf is not the big change that you DPSers out there that are getting beat by your tanks are looking for. Pretty much, your tank is still going to be doing a lot more damage than tanks have ever done in the past.
Well, let's shift the gear just a little bit. In competition with DPS, I can see where that will matter, but how is it going to affect survivability of tanks? Because if you're taking a hit on DPS slightly, you're obviously taking a hit on self-heals. So your tank or your healers are, I guess, you're going to have to work a little harder at keeping the tanks alive.
Things that do scale off of Vengeance, Warrior Shield Barrier, which is just a big absorb shield that they can put on themselves. Paladin's Word of Glory scales off of Vengeance. So there is going to be less self-healing available from certain tanks, Paladins and Monks, and as well as less big absorb shields going out from the Warriors. Death Knights, I don't tank on a Death Knight, so I can't personally speak to that, but I believe theirs is just based on the amount of damage that they take.
The Blood Shield is probably going to be affected quite significantly, as well as Deathstrike, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody is going to have an effect, which is going to be slightly negative. So there is going to be more tank damage going out, less reliance on just, oh, he's just going to Word of Glory himself back to full. So healers are going to have to work harder, but with the increase in gear level, from a 522 to a 540 or even a 550. They haven't really finalized what the normal mode raid gear item level is. The amount of heals that healers are going to be doing, I believe right now, like 75,000 heals per second is pretty good. They're going to be doing something like 100,000, maybe even 125,000. So the healing is going to increase to compensate, in my opinion, the nerf is going to have. But it is going to have the effect of, in general, your healers are going to have to work a little harder, your tanks are going to have to work much harder to stay where they are, and it's just going to decrease the craziness of having your tank topping DPS and heals. It's going to bring those rare events are going to be almost non-existent. They're going to go from being rare, one fight that one guild can do on your server, to maybe one guild in the world figured out how to do it, And I think overall it's just going to be the change that's going to make the players that play tanks and the healers have to be better to be good.
Well, thanks for clarifying that for us. There was a little bit of confusion over that. Let's move on to Warlocks. So we spent a little bit of time on Warlocks, and we kind of came to the general consensus that, yes, Warlocks are getting a bit of a nerf. They're going to have to manage their cooldowns a good bit more. And I had some very candid discussions with some Warlocks this past week. Some of them feel like the changes are going to hurt, but they're just going to have to step their game up. And some of the other Warlocks I talked to were just... they felt like it's going to destroy the class. I find it hard to believe that they would cripple a class in such a way that that it's going to impact the game that much, at least for those players. What have you heard from your Warlocks? I know you have a couple on your raid team.
My Warlocks pretty much say, like, it makes their 90 talent pretty much useless. Useless being that we haven't seen the fights yet, so we don't know the way that we can use those in specific phases and specific fights. Anybody who's played a Death Knight will know that sometimes your level 90 talent's useless. If there's not a stun, then Desecrated Ground's useless. If there's not adds, then Gorfiend's Grip's kind of useless. And if there's not adds, then Remorseless Winter's pretty useless. So that's unfortunate that it does happen that way, where a talent tier is completely not used. But in terms of, like, breaking their class, they have no fear that they're going to be topping the meters. They're still gung-ho, balls to the walls, like, we're going to be the class to beat. They've learned how to play their class, they've learned how their resource generation works, they've learned how to use that system to their advantage, and pretty much their only thing is, they're like, oh man, it's going to suck that we're not going to be able to just do these crazy things during the fights anymore. We're actually going to have to play intelligently to be good. Anybody who's seen a Warlock on Horrodon just able to keep Havoc up on Horrodon and attack the adds and deal more damage than everybody else will kind of know that, yeah, that's fun, but it's not necessarily the way that the fights are intended, to just have one class be able to completely be like, lol, JK, I'm here. You're going to kill the boss now because I'm broken.
Well, that makes good sense. And I'm always in agreement of scaling a class back in line with everyone else. I mean, if the Death Knights or the Rogues or the Druids can't do that, it really shouldn't be fair for other classes to be able to do duplicate DPS on a boss and adds.
Well, and they changed it, too. I've seen a lot of... outbreak on Twitter and stuff, and the devs kind of getting blown up about it. And in the patch notes from yesterday, the PTR patch notes, they've changed Kil'jaeden's cunning a lot from what they originally stated it was going to be.
What is that adjustment? Because I'm kind of looking at the patch notes as well, and I'm not seeing Kil'jaeden's cunning. They're still, it looks like Manaroth's Fury is still staying as is.
Yeah, I don't think Manaroth's Fury has changed with the nerf they put up, but Kil'jaeden's cunning, it now says no longer reduces movement speed and will now allow the Warlock to cast Incinerate, Malefic Grasp, and Shadow Bolt while moving. So I think, from my understanding, I don't play a Warlock, but it sounds like it's still going to be a passive ability, and it's going to let you cast some of your rotation on the move.
Okay, so they're kind of meeting them in the middle, which I guess is fair.
Yeah.
Actually, I can clarify that change a little bit. Before, it allowed you to cast while moving all the time. The passive ability was you could cast those three spells while moving, but when you did that, you moved 30% slower, and then you could activate the ability to give yourself, 10 seconds where you could cast while moving and not suffer the movement speed. So now they pretty much just took the passive out, so you can't cast while moving, but every minute 30, 1.5 minutes, so 90 seconds, you can activate it and cast while moving, cast those three abilities while moving with no movement speed penalty. So it just takes the passive with the movement speed away. I actually did have a long conversation with my Warlock about this, and he pretty much said that Kill Jaden's Cunning is what everyone's going to take because it allows you to have just that little bit of time where you're able to move and not have to worry about having your move speed slowed or having to worry about your DPS dropping. That change also comes in with a Fel Flame. They changed the way Fel Flame worked, which Fel Flame is the other Warlock ability that they could cast while moving. It's an instant cast that increases the duration of your dots, and to compensate for being able to cast while moving and refresh their dots, Fel Flame no longer increases the duration of their dots. So he was kind of saying that overall they kind of kept it the same and they just took away their ability to move 30% slower.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like this is a move to kind of meet the Warlocks in the middle. And it'll probably depend a lot on how the mechanics of the upcoming 5.4 fights are. It may play into their hands, as you know, a lot of the raids are. You'll encounter a boss where it works perfectly for your rotation and your setup, and then the next boss, not so much. Because, you know, certain classes, certain fights favor them, certain classes, other fights do not.
Yeah, having not seen the PvE boss mechanics, even just reading what the changes to the abilities are, I can almost guarantee you that there's going to be a boss that has an ability that every 90 seconds you have to move from point A to point B, and along the way you're going to be able to cast because everybody, is, like, Warlocks are going to be able to cast because their cooldown lines up with it, and so their damage isn't going to go down during those movement phases. So they're still going to have their really good damage, they're still going to have all their really good uptimes, and their ability is going to line up with the timers on the fight.
That's good to know. We don't have a Warlock in our group, but I know a lot of Warlocks out there will definitely appreciate that when that time finally does come. So let's move on to encounters. We had planned to discuss the raids that are current tier. We were going to bring in some people that have experienced it on the full progression tier. Unfortunately, our time scales didn't match up. We were a couple of days late. That's mostly on my end, so I apologize for that. But we will continue on as best we can. Is your Warlock available, or is he still not there?
My healer had an orthodontist appointment and is actually unable to talk right now. And my Warlock is going to be pretty much he has something that he has to take care of prior to our raid tonight, so I'm going to let him take care of that with his family. My apologies. I did promise that they'd be here. We will get them in to hear their opinions some other time, but just this week didn't line up.
All right. Well, we will definitely look forward to that. So let's take a look at the raids, and we're just going to keep our discussion pretty much centered on normal version. So let's say your group is walking in day one. You're looking at tier 15. You work your way through the trash, which can be a little challenging. Not going to spend any time on that. You can pretty much sort that out for your team. Your trash is kind of a, it's a mechanic check. If you can't make your way through the trash, you're probably not ready for the bosses in the instance. But let's just assume that you are. As you make your way up to the first boss, you're going to encounter Jinrot the Breaker. Jinrot is ideally a single phase fight. He'll do about 5 to 6 different abilities. Not very complicated. More or less a coordination situation that range will have to deal with. Melee won't have to deal with a whole lot. Tanks will have to be positional. And healers will have to basically be a little bit positional and deal with some movement mechanics. Not very complicated, an easy boss to progress through. So let's look at it, first of all, from the tanking perspective. You've approached the boss, you sat down, had your food, popped your flask, ran your countdown, and then the tank is ready to pull. How would you pull your boss, Arion, and then position him for your raid group to begin DPSing and healing?
All right, so the trick with Jinrot is Jinrot throws one of the tanks using an ability called Thundering Throw. He throws him, he picks your tank up, throws him like a baseball at one of the Mogu statues, and then the Mogu statue starts to leak water on the ground. That water turning into the big damage buff puddle of Doom that everybody stands in, and makes your DPS go up by like 50%.
Right, but he doesn't do that initially, though. I mean, when you first pull him, is there any kind of tank swapping that needs to happen during that, or like how does that go?
He has an ability called Static Burst. Static Burst, it's just he hits the tank with Static Burst. It does a moderate to low raid damage. I believe it's about 50k raid damage, and Static Burst is applied to the tank. After about 4 seconds, Static Burst becomes Static Wound. Static Wound has 10 stacks that decrease either over time or are decreased every time the player affected by Static Wound receives a melee strike from Genrok.
It's the melee strike that actually activates the Static Wound raid damage, correct?
Yeah, if you're tanking Genrok while you have Static Wound on you and there's stacks, it deals raid-wide damage based on the number of stacks. 10 being a lot of raid damage actually goes out, and he does melee fairly quickly. I believe his swing timer is about every 2 seconds, so he can quickly overwhelm your raid, especially if you have a block tank being a warrior or a paladin, because they're not able to dodge the strike. When you dodge, he actually doesn't hit you, so he doesn't trigger the raid damage when your paladin or your warrior block. Since they did block, they are technically still getting hit. I don't know why it's just Blizzard's way.
Okay. Yeah. Now I know I have heard that DKs anti magic shell avoid the application of static bursts. I think right after the initial tank gets thrown, if you happen to have a DK tank, I believe he can anti-magic shell avoid the application of static burst, because a lot of times what will happen is one tank will get thrown, and then the other tank left standing there, he'll get an application right away, and then your raid almost has to take a zap of the static wound while that other tank is stunned. So a DK tank is probably a really good choice for that fight if you have one available.
Death Knights, their anti-magic shell, if you've never read the ability, prevents the application of harmful magical effects during its duration. So your DK can time it so that when static burst, about 2 seconds before, 1 to 2 seconds before static burst goes out, he activates his anti-magic shell. Static burst goes out. He's not affected by the static burst. If he doesn't have static burst, it can't become static wound. There is a way to actually avoid your raid taking a couple of bursts when that tank gets thrown. We call it taunting the throw. Thundering throw, he picks up his current tank target and throws them. And so you can actually time it. If your tank has a DBM or Bigwigs, they'll have a timer on your Thundering Throw, and with about 2 seconds remaining until he casts Thundering Throw, your tank that has stacks of Static Wound can taunt Genrok. Genrok will then pick them up and throw them, and since they're not getting meleeed, the Static Wound isn't activated, so no raid damage goes out. Then the tank that was tanking Genrok prior to the taunt going out will just taunt back, and Genrok will stay standing right next to that other tank, and that tank doesn't have an application of static wound, which that application of static wound will come out 2 seconds after thundering throw. So he'll basically be getting, the tank will get thrown, then the new tank will get an application of static wound right away. So there is raid damage that goes out with the static wound. It's unavoidable just the way the timers work out, and basically as a tank your job is to minimize the number of stacks that are active on the tank that is going to get those couple melees to just reduce the amount of raid damage. We've personally never had a problem with the static wound being what kills anybody, unless the tank with 10 stacks is standing in the water, which you should never do.
Yeah, as a healer, I've healed that fight many, many times. A couple of applications of static wound to the raid typically won't kill you. It just can't go prolonged. So proper taunt swapping, like you said, is absolutely key to that fight. So you've gotten tossed. You've created a puddle. After about 30 to 40 seconds, he'll begin to do the lightning storm. How do you guys typically handle that?
As this is a strat for normal mode, pretty much we mark one of the tanks at about 5 seconds before lightning storm. Everybody moves out of the puddle. The puddle of water increases your nature damage taken by, I believe it's 200%. So if you're standing in the puddle of water during lightning storm, anybody who's been in real life knows that you don't want to be on water when there's a thunderstorm outside.
It's so true.
So basically, you know, basic real world physics apply to World of Warcraft. Sometimes don't be staying in the water when the lightning storm is going on. When everyone runs out of water, we stack on the tank, and then when everybody's stacked on the tank, we just heal through the lightning storm's damage, as well as we pop raid cooldowns, being a devotion aura, smoke bomb, or a power word barrier. To help reduce the amount of raid damage we take, we normally line up 2 cooldowns per lightning storm. Normally we line up a devotion aura with a smoke bomb, and then we run 2 paladins, so we have access to 2 devotion auras. Then we use on the other ones devotion aura as well as power word barrier, giving us about a 40% damage reduction. I know that like the way that the math actually works, your first ability goes out, so Aura Mastery goes out, reduces the damage you take by 20%. Then your second one's calculated, so you take 20% of 80%, which is actually not at a full 20%. But for our purposes, we just say that it's 40%, when in reality it's probably 34% less damage. The way it also works is lightning storms happen 90 seconds. There's 90 seconds in between each lightning storm. That gives you enough time that your 3-minute raid cooldowns, devotion aura, smoke bomb, all of those things are 3 minutes. You can use them every other lightning storm. So we break our groups down into group 1 and 3 and then group 2 and 4 as far as big raid cooldowns are concerned.
All right. Well, you're only going to get 3 for that fight. If you get to the 4th, you're probably not going to make the encounter. So the next thing is, so the lightning storm has ended. I found in my personal opinion, creating pools in opposite corners of each other is typically not a good idea. For some reason, it will always cause confusion. So do you guys prefer to make your pools, say, like the pillar when you first enter on the front left side, which is closest to you, and then maybe one on the one to the right front side, or the one maybe on the left back side? So they're not basically across from each other?
Yeah, when you enter the room, you'll see the 4 pillars. Basically, I'm assuming you're facing the boss. We use the front left, then the back left, and then the back right. And then the 4th and final pool that we get, we would use the front right. At that point, the room will be completely covered in water, except for outside on the drainage grates that water can't form on.
Right.
But yeah, I would agree. Throwing water to like the front left and then the back right kind of creates like a two unattached zones where raiders will get stuck like on one half of the room. And it what'll always seem to happen is your range DPS, it's like 2 ranged and a melee, get cut off from the rest of the group with no healer, or all 3 of your healers get cut off.
Yeah,
it's never like a good situation where it's like, oh yeah, 2 of our healers are two ranged and 1 healer are over there. It's always like the rogue, the mage, and the hunter that can't have no way to keep themselves alive or stuck alone.
Or all 3 healers. You don't want your group to be split on that fight by any means. Now, actually creating where you want the pools to spawn, there's been a lot of confusion. I've done this with many, many groups, and some groups will say, well, it's the way he's facing or the way he's turned. Or which boss or which tank is tanking him? Like, how do you make him throw you where you want him to throw you?
Actually, his throw is based on what you had for breakfast. Your tank has to eat oatmeal for breakfast. No, he actually throws the tank to the furthest pillar from where he's standing.
Okay.
So actually, in the beginning, our tanks run all the way around to the back right pillar. So the if you're thinking of setup, the raid walked into the room. That's where the raid's standing, right, looking straight at him. He's looking back at you. You guys are making ugly faces at each other. Your tanks run around behind him and slightly off to the side, and we pull him so that he's not actually standing just in the middle. You know, a lot of groups just don't move him. We actually do move him off of where his initial starting position is. He does have a fairly large hitbox, so you have to give him a little bit of room to run. But we do pull him towards the pillar that is farthest away from the pillar we want him to get thrown to.
That's a pretty clear explanation of how to tank him in a proper sequence. So I'm going to discuss how to heal the fight from a healer perspective. Now, once the tanks engage him, they're going to immediately move him away from that pillar. So you can expect that your tank is going to be initially a range from you. You want to go ahead and get right on up there, close and personal with Jinrock. Your tank is going to need initial burst healing. He's going to just start getting whacked pretty hard. And then once he gets the static burst, there's going to be a taunt swap. So you're going to need to switch your focus to the other tank. So keep an eye on them. There's not a whole lot of raid damage. Eventually, one of your tanks will get tossed. Now, as your tank gets tossed, you're probably not going to be anywhere in the ballpark of the area where the tank's going to land. But just say you are within a certain range. I believe it's about 8 yards. If you just happen to be where that tank lands, perhaps you're counting a ball out and you're on your way back and you just happen to be in that range. If he lands within 8 yards of you, you can get stun locked right there. And you take a significant amount of damage. So try and avoid that if all possible. Once the tank gets tossed, you want to start migrating over towards that puddle. Eventually, there'll be a tank swap where the tank landed. So Jinrock is going to head on over there. That puts everybody in range. Once you start tank healing the tank that has Jinrock, he'll position him where he needs to be. And your range issues are pretty much dissolved at that point. You're going to start getting more raid damage at this point. People are going to pick up the little ball lightning, which is called Focus Lightning. You need to really keep an eye on your DBM. If you are picked for Focus Lightning, and as a healer you are very likely to have this happen, you're going to need to kite that to a designated area that the raid lead will specify for you. As you're going, be very, very careful not to kite that over what's called a lightning fissure. That is the little arc thing that is created once the Focus Lightning is detonated. It'll leave a little spot on the ground. If you kite your Focus Lightning ball across that, it'll do a ton of raid damage. You don't want that. So you'll drop your Focus Lightning out on the edge and then migrate back to the group. A good strategy for dealing with that is to, as the pool expands, slowly kind of inch your way out on the edge. So if you do get picked for Focus Lightning, you don't have as far to run to the designated area while keeping an eye on your tank and your other, you know, raiders. And as he explained earlier, periodically, you're going to get an ability called Lightning Storm. Now, this is a very healing intensive phase. Typically, you'll make it through the raid and then get to this and then realize this is going to be a very healing, challenging part. If you do not utilize a raid cooldown, it's going to be extremely difficult to heal through. The cast time on the Lightning Storm, I believe, is 15 seconds.
Yeah, he channels it for 15 seconds.
Let me go ahead and say this from personal experience. That is a very, very long 15 seconds. If you utilize raid cooldowns, as Arion specified earlier, it will help. But in my opinion, it feels like that lasts for about 30 seconds. You're going to spend a lot of mana. So realize, if you survive that phase, you've pretty much seen the bulk of the fight. Because what he'll do is he'll reset. The tanks will position him for the next pillar throw, and you just repeat what you've just done. So once you survive Lightning Storm, you can ease off the throttle a little bit, regen some mana, use a mana regening cooldown, some of your mana back, and just kind of prepare for the next fight. Always anticipating your next movement. You know you're probably going to get a Focus Lightning, so be ready to move on that. Once the tank lands on the throw, be ready to move to the puddle, eat to the edge, and you'll just repeat that process. So that is pretty much all you will need to do to progress that fight as a healer. Kung Pao, could you detail how you would handle the melee version of that fight?
Well, the melee version, as with a lot of bosses in TOT, is actually pretty simple. We just run in and beat the tar out of Jinrock. We don't get the Focus Lightning, so we don't have to worry about getting out of the pool. We can just basically stand there and beat his face in until Lightning Storm. Once Lightning Storm comes, we stack up and, you know, blow personal cooldowns. Warriors have Die by the Sword, things like that. And once you survive that, you know, it's basically waiting for the next pool to pop out, getting in it, using your personal damage cooldowns while you're in the pool. It's also a good time to bloodlust. And that's literally the entire fight for melee.
Sounds very simple and to the point. Now, we didn't cover range DPS, but you can pretty much interpret range DPS in the fashion what I explained to healer, because in application, they're going to do the exact same thing, but instead of healing, you're just DPSing. Positionally, there's not much difference. So, ideally, if your DPS is appropriate and the tanks are positioning him right and your healers are not letting people die, you should shoot forward, probably downing him by the formation of the third pool. If you're making it to the fourth pool, you're probably a little behind on DPS, and it's still very doable from there, but you're going to be very, very close to getting yourself in a jam with nowhere left to stand. But ideally, by the third pool, you should have him down and collecting your loot. Once Jinrock is down, you're going to get through the very, very fun crash.
Bridge OP.
Oh, the bridge. It's so much entertainment.
Bridge OP.
Now, the bridge, let's touch on this lightly, because the bridge can consume a lot of time for raid groups that have not been there before. As you approach the bridge, you will spring out a gang of snakes that apply a good bit of nature poison damage to the tanks, so keep an eye on your tanks. Also, you'll notice that there are like little floating trolls in a beam of light. Most people will go into LFR and realize that this does some burst damage to you that typically won't kill you. In normal, it probably won't kill you, but it does a massive knockback that will knock you off the bridge. The one that circles initially will knock you off the edge into the little void area. You can't be res from there, so you might as well just go ahead and run back quickly. And there are a couple of trolls patrolling out on the edges of the build, the edges of the bridge. You want to pull those singularly. If you pull two, don't run back to your group, just jump off the side and die. That will save your group a ton of time. Pull one at a time.
Those banshees off the edge, what they do is they do a stacking debuff. The stacking debuff does raid-wide damage as well as reduces healing by 5% per application. It does stack up to 20, and if you have more than one, you're going to stack to 20 extraordinarily quickly, and you're probably not going to have the DPS to just burn one of them down and then kill the other one without having any healing. It's real important that either your tanks understand how to body pull them, body pulling being you just aggro via proximity, like I'm close enough to them that they want to kill me, and then run
or
back
to the
group.
Or face pull, as a lot of people would call it.
Face pull, face check. Or having a ranged via like a hunter. A hunter's really good because they can increase their own movement speed and move around with deterrence.
A lot of those classes are really good. Like a monk is exceptional for that. They have a lot of movement abilities. Maybe even a druid or a hunter, is really good. So you're going to need to pull those one at a time and work your way down. A neat little trick is once you've cleared the four banshees on the initial bridge, you'll find a large golem down at the far end. Unless you get the raid,
weekly
the quest?
Boss.
Yeah, the weekly quest boss. If you do happen to get that, a good trick is to send your tank down and aggro him, and then kite him all the way back to Jinrock's area. That removes any of the knockback mobs, and it makes that fight 100% easier. If not, you will get the golem. The golem stands right in the center of a round pillar. If you want to pull him once your group is gathered up on you, you only want to go to about the first or second step leading up to that pillar. Send your tank up, grab aggro on him, and then stack right in the very center of that pillar. It avoids the circulating, or the two trolls that kind of just circle around. You'll avoid the knockback ability from them, and you can just DPS the golem down. You can also maintain that position and send someone out to pull all of the little banshees on the sides from that position, eliminating the knockback ability from the trolls as well. Once you cleared all the trolls, you just move down. There'll be more snakes to spring, and then there'll be an ad down there that is, you know, very simple to kill.
Gives you valor now, though.
That's right, it does. What does it give you, like 20 valor now?
Yeah, 20.
Yeah, 20, something like that.
Which is very nice if you just don't want to make a big effort to try and valor cap it. It helps a little bit. So, as you move into the next arena, you will encounter Hordon. Hordon is a fight that is rather unique. I found it to be a very enjoyable fight, personally, because it required a lot of individual responsibility from your raiders. It's hard to direct that fight because there is so much chaos going on. There'll be a good bit of RP initially. You'll hear a troll up on a balcony, you know, just going on with this typical troll jabber, jibber jabber. And then Hordon will bust through. He's a large triceratops that has to be engaged by a tank.
He does have laser beam cannons. On his sides, he's the coolest boss ever. Like, I'm just going to throw that out there.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Hordon is the best. He's a dinosaur with laser beams. Like, come on, let's be honest.
I want dinosaur, to see a beams, fight though. Between Hordon and Undasta.
I think Undasta would win, because Undasta, like, slays players like no one's business.
Oh, they nerfed Frill Blast, though, but I don't know, it'd still be a good one.
I'd watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Hordon comes out. He's raring to go, stomping, snorting, and he can be quite a unique challenge all his own. So how about just explaining how you would tank Hordon? And this is, without a doubt, a two-tank fight, you would agree?
Yeah, it's a two-tank fight. Some people will call, if you have enough paladins, two paladins, and they both spec into clemency, you can have one tank. Just deal with Hordon. We call it one tanking, but you do need two tank spec characters in your raid. One to deal with Hordon and one to deal with the adds that come flooding into the room from the open doors. Each door opens separately, so it's not like all four doors have adds pouring in. Basically, Hordon does two abilities that tanks need to worry about. He does an ability called Triple Puncture. He's a Triceratops, he has three horns. He punctures your armor with the horns, deals a large amount of physical damage, as well as gives you a debuff called Triple Puncture. That debuff stacks indefinitely, increasing the damage of each subsequent Triple Puncture by, I believe it's either 10 or 20%. They do have a long duration, greater than a minute, so the only way to get it to wear off is to either have a tank take it from you, or to have a Blessing of Protection, Divine Shield, something of that nature will actually remove those stacks. When you're tanking, the other ability he does is he does an ability called Double Swipe. Double Swipe puts like a little earthquake on the ground in front of him and behind him, and he basically thrashes his head and his tail back and forth. If you stand in it, you're going to take a large amount of physical damage, and he does this twice. You won't notice it because the animation looks really strange from his character model, but he actually is thrashing back and forth in that area, and if you're standing there, you're probably going to get hit for about 200,000, and immediately you're going to get hit for another 200,000, and then if you're really unlucky, he's going to, right after that, hit you with a Triple Puncture. So you're probably going to take about 800,000 damage in a span of 2 to 3 seconds. Your healers, they like you, they don't love you that much, and they probably are not going to be able to keep you alive without a defensive cooldown if you're just going to stand there and take the double swipes. The double swipes is just a small cone in front of him. I believe it's about a 20-degree cone. It's pretty simple to just run out of. It's not that complicated to get out of for a tank. You can easily see where it is.
It is very easy to navigate.
The important thing to remember is that he does it behind him as well, and that's where your tank positioning comes in. Pretty much, as a tank, you want to keep your raid on one of his sides or one of his flanks, whatever visual gives you a better idea. You want to face him so that like your raid is to a 90-degree. That basically eliminates the chance that somebody's going to be standing behind his tail and just eats a double swipe to the face.
Well, this is something that I kind of wanted to discuss with you. How do you position him from door to door? Is there a particular side of the door that y'all prefer? Or is it just where you feel like is appropriate for that particular door at the time?
Pretty much the way that we position Horrodon is we have whatever healer is designated to heal the tank, and the tank, they go take Horrodon. We call Horrodon a fluffy teddy bear, and we take him away. There's no reason for us to have Horrodon anywhere near where the door is. All it really does is it causes a giant mob that's very easy to click on, and you're not able to like click through him to get to the targets when he's standing on top of the trolls that are coming out of the door.
Right.
So we tank him in the middle. Like, there's no real reason for him to be close to the door. He does a charge where he just charges in on somebody and then does a double swipe, pretty easy to avoid. Then he immediately just goes and runs back to the tank in the middle. So
okay.
People will see Horrodon occasionally, but really, you don't need to. The way the fight works, he gets a stacking debuff of 50% increased damage taken. So there's no real reason to be trying to cheese your numbers and get extra damage in on Horrodon, especially because the Dinomancer does do a heal on Horrodon, so all the damage you do anyway for basically the first three doors is completely negated by the fact that you're probably not going to get interrupts on the Dinomancer fast enough to prevent that heal. So instead of dealing with people tunneling Horrodon, think LFR, where Horrodon's at like 50% after you're killing the second door, we just remove him from the fight. The tank and the healer go off on their merry adventure, and they just tank Horrodon away from us, and then the raid group is left to deal with the adds coming out of the door. Any groups that are having the problem of the adds aren't dying fast enough, it's because your DPS are, we call them scumbags, and they're just tunneling the boss.
Okay.
You see it happen a lot.
Well, that kind of answers my question. I was going to ask you, like, how did you deal with charge? Because a lot of times DPS will get picked for charge and they'll forget to move out, or they just don't react in time. So Horrodon will end up right in the middle of where the fight is going on. But since you move him so far away, I assume he'll charge wherever the person is in the group, do his thrash, and then immediately go back to the tank.
Yeah, he does. Having Horrodon away means that when the giant dinosaur comes charging, you know, 30, 40, 50 yards from you at you, it's pretty easy to notice the giant moving laser beam cannon carrying dinosaur running at you.
It gives you more time to get out of the group.
Yeah, that's the second thing as well. So it's really easy to notice, and it gives you a lot more time. And pretty much we have whoever gets targeted, DBM or other boss mods will announce who gets targeted. It'll say, like, charge on blah, blah, blah. The other way is Blizzard actually has an announcement where it says, like, Horrodon sets his gaze on the player and then stamps his tail.
Right, yeah.
That indicates that he's going to charge you.
Yeah, that pops up in the raid chat. So it's even if you don't have a DBM or a Bigwigs, which I do encourage you to have, you're still notified regardless.
Yeah, and pretty much we just have that person that gets targeted. They run towards the center of the room, and everybody else tends to migrate closer to the door, just because in case they're not, like, mages have a pretty easy time because they can blink. Hunters can, you know, move pretty quickly, but things like a warrior, if a warrior doesn't have, like, heroic leap up, they don't really have a way to move out really quickly. So, you know, help out your raiders, help out your healers, you know. If your raider's making the effort to move to the center of the room, and he just can't really get all the way the same distance that a mage can, and you're just going to stand there next to him where he's running as a range, like, it's not his fault that you're getting hit, it's your fault because you're not moving. You need to be conscious of your positioning as well. Like, it's pretty simple, though. They just run to the center of the room. Horrodon charges them. He doesn't do any damage to them. If he does, it's very, very light. And then he does his double swipe. They just continue running out of the double swipe. Horrodon turns back around, runs back to the tank, and then they return to killing the adds that are coming out of the door. they're only out of the action for like maybe 10 seconds.
That simplifies the fight tremendously as far as how Horridon interacts with the fight. So let's say your DPS and your healers have progressed through all four doors. On the last door, we'll cover that as well, but just skipping ahead. On the last door, the adds come down, you click the orb, Dynamancer gets killed, Horridon crashes the door, and you clean up the adds. Now there's going to be a period where you, if you're far enough ahead on DPS, you'll get to spend some time on Horridon. What would you do from there?
Pretty much after the fourth door is destroyed, that's when Horridon actually matters. Up to that point, he doesn't really, the amount of damage that you've done to him doesn't really matter. He's taking 200% increased damage, and there's basically, you're still dealing with the triple punctures and the double swipes and the charges. There's no adds coming out of the door, so your aid can like stack up. You can get your mana back. There's only the tanks taking damage because nobody's standing in double charge, and it gives you a little bit of a breather. And then I believe it's on a timer as well, but either you're going to have Horridon hit 30%, or the timer is going to hit the time where Horridon's big daddy, war god Jalik, is going to jump into the arena and join into the fight. The tank who's not tanking Horridon, we actually perform a switch. Jalik jumps down, and then he has about a 1 second before he becomes active. During that time, we usually tank switch and have that tank that has triple puncture stacks take War God, and then the new tank that doesn't have any triple puncture stacks is taking Horridon. And your raid needs to focus on War God Jalik. Jalik does a raid-wide shout that deals a moderate to high amount of physical damage, and it increases the amount of damage that the next shout will do, to the point where if you ignore him and you don't kill him, he's eventually just going to get to the point where he's just killing people with his raid-wide shout. So as soon as Jalik comes down, tank picks him up, we pop Bloodlust and Bloodlust to kill Jalik. As I've said, Horridon has 200% increased damage taken. He does have a lot of health, but he's taking more than double the amount of damage that he normally does. So he's pretty much, his health pool melts. Jalik dies. Horridon starts dealing a little more damage to your tank, but there's no raid damage going out, so your healers just have to focus the tank a little more, and then you pretty much kill Horridon.
Okay, that's a pretty clear explanation of how to properly tank that boss. So I'm going to cover how to heal, and I'm going to cover how to heal the tank that is tanking Horridon and how to heal the individual raiders on the doors. Now, healing this fight cannot be explained in a very simplified manner. It's mostly just going to be healer accountability. Now, once Horridon's engaged, he'll be moved to wherever your raid prefers, though I do suggest putting him in the middle, just to eliminate him from the fight for the first four doors, because the doors themselves are complicated enough. You don't want him integrated into the fight. So the first door that'll come out, you're going to get a number of these trolls that are accompanied by Basilisks. The trolls can apply a dot to your raid. They will also drop sand traps, where little pools of quicksand on the ground that you do not want to stand in. And the Basilisk can also apply an 8-second stun. Now, the priority here is to heal the people that are always low, debuff your tanks first, or dispel your tanks, I'm sorry, not debuff. You want to dispel your tanks first, and if you can dispel other people, I would advise doing that, but just be careful, because if you're a healer, you know that every time you use a dispel, you're going to spend about 10% of your mana. So be very careful with this. Your healers on the first door, it's not going to be very healing intensive. It's mostly a coordination of the DPS on this first door. So dispel your tanks, keep your raid members up, keep an eye on the charge. If you're picked for charge, you're going to need to move out appropriately. You don't want to send Horridon right in on the middle of your group while they're trying to deal with mechanics. If you dispel properly, if you heal the people that are getting low, and you don't stand in a sand trap, you'll more than likely get through that door with very little challenge. Then you'll move on to the second door. The second door can be a little more challenging, and it can be a bit of a doorstop for a lot of the groups, because then you're going to move on to these adds that do poison abilities. They can apply a raid-wide stacking debuff that does a ton of damage to your group that can be interrupted. And this is something that you're going to really, really want to reinforce to your raid. You will get what is called Gurubashi Venom Priest that'll cast an ability called Venom Bolt Volley. That should be interrupted 100% of the time. As the adds come down, they will come down initially one Venom Bolt or Venom Priest, and then a second, and then they'll come down in pairs from there. I may not be 100% accurate on that. I'll have our DPS explain that a little more thoroughly, but that should be interrupted 100% of the time. If it is missed, you will want to dispel your tanks first. You don't want them taking a tremendous amount of damage. The rest of your raiders, if they get no more than 2 to 3 stacks, they'll probably be fine. You can heal through that, and the dot will likely fall off. But just make sure you dispel your tanks, heal your group. They will also put a pool of green moving stuff, and let me reiterate, moving. The living poison that lands on the ground will migrate all over the area, so you need to be aware of where you're standing. Coupled with the charges, you're going to just have to just, you know, watch your position frequently. If you transcend through that door, hopefully you don't have too many stacks of the Venom Bolt Volley creating the poison debuff on you. You'll move to the third door, and then you'll get a set of adds that come out and apply another debuff. If you hadn't noticed the trend here, all of the doors apply some sort of debuff to your raid. Now, the warriors or the champions can apply a debuff called Deadly Plague. Now, Deadly Plague is a shadow-based ability. It can only be dispelled by a couple of classes. I think Pallies and Priests can do it. It's a disease, yes. So Shamans cannot dispel that. I'm not sure about Monks. But this
Monks
is a,
can remove everything.
Monks can remove it. So if you have a healing monk in your class or in your group, that will help tremendously. But the Deadly Plague is not so much like the other debuffs, where if it gets applied, you want to dispel it quickly. It's a stacking debuff, so what will happen is it will get applied with one stack, and then it will climb to 2, and then to 3, and then to 4, and to 5. So what I've found is once it's applied, you want to keep an eye on everybody. And every time someone starts to reach 5 or 6 stacks, dispel that person. And then another person below them who have 2 or 3, don't dispel them. Let it climb. Once it gets to 5 or 6, dispel that person. So the stacks are not getting really, really high, so you're not sitting there dispelling one person with 1 to 2 stacks while another person is at 8 or 9 stacks. You want to keep the stacks low. That's how you want to dispel that ability while healing. Now, there's going to be some other mechanics there, but I'll let our DPS explain those. Position on that particular door is very critical, because I will discuss one of the abilities here that is called, I don't know it off the top of my head, but we just call it the Frozen Orb. It's an orb that will come out. If you're within a range of it, which I think is about 6 to 8 yards, you'll take a tremendous amount of damage, and you will be slowed massively, so you'd be hard to get out of. And if you have anything beaten on you, and you likely will, going to take even more damage. So just be aware of those things and avoid them at all possibility. Now, if you clear that up and you head on to the fourth door, the fourth door is not quite as challenging for healers. You'll notice a bit more spike damage on your tank because periodically a mob will come down called the Amani Warbear. Now, as a healer, you want to make very, very certain that you are never in front of that bear. If anybody remembers back to the Kata days, if you remember way back to the original Zul'Gurub raids, I never did that. I didn't play during that time. But during Kata raids, they brought those back as 5-man dungeons. And those bears did a massive cleave ability. They still do that now. That bear jumps down and is picked up by your tank and you're standing in front of him. You're going to take cleave damage that will likely kill you. So avoid those mobs, heal that tank because he's going to take a good bit of spike damage from it, and then more troll adds will jump down and they'll apply different debuffs that are not really important. You can just heal through their ability, but one will periodically drop a lightning totem. Much like the Frost Orb, avoid that. It does a lot of damage. It's easy to see. Just move away from it, and you should be fine. Now, once you clear the fourth door, as the tank specified earlier, you got plenty of time to regen some mana. Your tank is getting hit with triple puncture just like you had been. There's nothing new about it. You just avoid the swipe, and you get a bit of a breather. Now, about probably anywhere from 10 to 30 seconds into the fight, depending on how your DPS has progressed this, the War God Jellak will jump down. You need to kind of get on your guns here, because immediately what is going to happen is he's going to jump down, be picked up by a tank, and that tank is going to start taking significant damage from him. Now, he's also, while he's beating on that tank, he's going to throw out an ability called Bestial Cry, which is a raid-wide damage that's going to hit your raid for a significant amount. It also applies a stacking debuff, so the first one that hits the group is going to hurt them significantly. The second one that hits him is going to hit them for more damage. The third is going to hit for even more. It will just literally overwhelm you if you can't beat, you can't burst him down in time to basically just be overwhelmed by that ability. So, assuming you can, you'll kill him, and then at this point, Hordon will become enraged. But he doesn't really do any new abilities. He just hits a little harder for the triple puncture. But it's not overwhelming, because remember, there's no new adds. You only have to heal the tank that is tanking Hordon. You can tank swap this off, or like Arion said, you can bop off the stacks with the paladins. And Hordon should be a pretty much an easy burn fight from there. Also, I've noticed that there is an ability where you can actually disarm Jellak. And it'll reduce the damage that you receive from Bestial Cry. So if you have a class there, like a monk or a warrior that can disarm, you might want to throw that ability into the fight as well, just to make it a little easier for you. Now, I would like to have our DPS kind of detail how to manage the doors as far as the adds that come out, and like interrupts, cooldowns, positions, things of that nature.
Sure.
Boom, pal.
When the first door opens up, you're going to have a little time when we first pull Hordon to get some DPS on him, you know, as a warrior, generate rage, things like that. The first door is going to come out. You're going to blow up the two little adds, the Stone Gazer and the little troll that is just randomly beats on people. Then you're going to get the Faraki Wastewalkers to come down. Now, these are the quote-unquote big adds or elite adds, I've heard them called. Those are the ones that do the Blading Sunlight that healers have to dispel, and you need to blow these guys up pretty quick. Because what happens is you're going to get one, you're going to kill him, then you're going to get two, and you need to focus down one. And once you kill one of the two, the Dynamancer is going to come out. So at that point, you need to switch to the Dynamancer. Make sure you're getting the interrupts to keep the healing off Hordon. And you're going to kill the Dynamancer. And you have to get him down to 50% pretty quickly. Because when he gets to 50%, he's going to stop casting the heal ability. And he's going to drop an orb. Now what that orb does, you click on it. And it basically takes control of Hordon, and it sends him flying at the door that the adds are coming out of. So once he hits the door, no more adds are going to spawn. Yeah, you just need to clean up what you have and move on to the second door. At that point, we usually have one Wastewalker still up, and maybe a few of the little basilisks and little trolls running around. But they're pretty easy to clean up. Once you get to the second door, this one's big for interrupts, and I like using some of my shorter 1 or 3 minute DPS cooldowns here. You're going to get the Gurabashi Venom Priest, like Shroomy said earlier, and you need to have the interrupts, you got to be on top of those, because that Venom Bolt Volley, excuse me, I can't talk. The Venom Bolt Volley is going to get out, and it's going to wipe you if you don't get the interrupts on it. So, any class, warriors, DKs, hunters with silencing shot, that is a big priority on killing those.
Yeah, they always typically jump down in a particular area, so you can even assign people to coordinate interrupts on these mobs as they come out fairly easily, correct?
Yeah, you can, and that is actually what we do. Just like the first door, you're going to get the one ad to come down in the center first. Everybody on that one, everybody fights for the interrupt on it. Once that one dies, well, it's on a timer, but hopefully you have that one dead. But the next two are going to come out. We usually assign one melee, a DK specifically, but anyone with an interrupt will work, to the left ad, and then the rest of us focus on the right ad and blow him up. The reason we have the DK on the left ad is purely for interrupts alone. That just keeps the stacks low and keeps it easier on the healers, and I know you guys like that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And one other thing they do, after they cast the Venom Bolt Volley, you're going to get maybe 5 or 10 seconds where they're just meleeing you, and they're going to spawn adds. They're called Venomous Effusions, and they're basically little green transparent trolls. Now, the thing with these adds, they also cast Venom Bolt Volley, and that's why it's so important to get the interrupts off on the Venom Priests themselves, because you're no doubt you're probably going to end up getting one or two stacks of the poison with the ad spawning. The nice thing about the Venomous Effusions, they only have like 850,000 health. It's really not all that much. They can be blown up pretty quick. Okay. Now, when they die, they are going to drop that living poison that you talked about on the ground. That literally just, it's living. It moves around. So just you stay out of that. You know, stay out of the poo. Clean it up. The Dynamancer is going to come down again, and you're going to blow him up, get the orb, and move on to the third door.
Now, you're going to want to interrupt him initially as soon as he hits the ground, correct? Because he does an ability, I think it's called Dino Mending?
Yeah, Dino Mending. Just, he's the exact same mob on the first door, and you need to get on him and interrupt that as fast as possible. And then again, once he hits 50% health, he's going to transform into the dino and drop an orb on the ground, and that's the end of that.
Okay. And like with the orb, once you click it, you can't cast abilities or anything, correct? But you can still move, right?
Yeah, you can still move, run around, stay out of poo. You can't use that as an excuse to die in the living poison, but you cannot attack. You're basically pacified.
It's only like, what, maybe a 6 or 8 second channel?
I think it's 10, but I'm not sure.
It's okay. Not a big enough deal to really matter, because the job of having Horadon run into the door is more important than any damage you can get out anyway.
Yeah, it's a lot absolutely. More important.
All right, so on the third door, that thing is just wild chaos for everybody.
Yeah, that's where we see a lot of the problems, and it gets a little crazy. But just like the first two doors, you're going to have some little ads come out. You'll have to just blow those up real quick, and then you're going to get one big ad. Now, this guy is called a Frozen Warlord, and you have to be on top of this guy as fast as possible, because he needs to be put down quick. And this is where we seem to get a little chaotic at times, because what will happen is we won't kill him fast enough, and we'll get the next two, so we have a total of three warlords out at once. Now, what he does that's so special is he casts a Frozen Orb, I believe it's called, and what it does, it looks exactly like a mage's Frozen Orb, and it's an area of effect of, I think, 8 or 10 yards, maybe, and if you stand in it, you're going to be slowed, and it's going to do a lot of damage to you. So when he starts casting that, your tank needs to move the ad out of there, and all the DPS needs to get out of there. Because that will kill you pretty quick, and that will wipe the raid.
Also, I noticed quite frequently, is while you're DPSing, what do you call them, the ward?
Frozen Warlord,
you're going to get smaller ads that will come out, and it'll just randomly aggro to people. I think our tank that typically tanks that door will tell us, like, those mobs have no threat table, like they can't be taunted.
to clarify, the adds on the third door fixate. They just pick a target and they're going to attack that target until that target's dead. You can taunt them off of somebody, but then they'll just run back after your taunt wears off. Pretty much the way to like make it kind of cheesy is they can target pets. Pets being Stampede and Army of the Dead. So to make that a lot easier, you can have your Death Knights army cast their Army of the Dead during that door, and then as the adds run out, since there's so many more little undead adds than players, the chance of them targeting the undead adds is really high, and your little undead guy dying isn't that big of a deal compared to a player dying. So it's actually like a very cheesy and fun way to watch like the little undead versus the trolls as they fight to the death.
The little minion. That's actually very creative. I hadn't thought of that. But just the
also,
same, they
on that,
like, they'll melee
note
you,
on that
but
door.
They don't do a whole lot of damage. Like you can, even as a mage, you can pretty much just burn that guy down once you've killed the frozen warlord. Correct. I mean, they're not going to just beat you down in a matter of seconds.
Another thing that you can do, tank, if you're tanking that door, is have your group just stack up, except for, of course, the healer that's healing the horde on tank and the horde on tank himself. The group can just stack up, and you can walk together, because the frozen warlords drop the orb at their feet. They don't cast it on an area, they just drop it at their feet. So if everyone's stacked up and you see the frozen orb dropped, it actually takes a couple seconds to activate before it starts slowing and dealing damage. So you have more than enough time to watch it get dropped and then just walk away as a group. And then all the adds are coming in at the same area, so they're getting hit by that passive AoE. Your Death Knights, Howling Blasts, your mages are going to love you. Your tank is probably able to do a lot of AoE damage, like Blood Boil, Swipe, Thrash, Keg Smash, all of those things. So that AoE damage of you being stacked together is actually going to kill those adds faster than having to single target them down, because your mage wants to blink halfway across the world and run away.
Yeah, that's actually how we do that door, is we assign all the melee onto the tank and then all of the range and healers onto one healer, and we just transition that door in one big lump, and it keeps people within range of heals and within range of all the DPS, so you get a lot less scatter on players. It makes that door tremendously easier. So yes, that is an amazing suggestion. So moving on to the fourth door, that door can be rather challenging for DPS.
Yeah, it can be. Hopefully you don't have too many frozen orbs out in the area where the adds are coming out. If you do, just avoid them. But you're going to get the little adds that come out of the door are going to be called a protector and a flame caster. And the protector is basically a melee guy who runs around with a shield beating on people and can be tanked. And the flame caster just casts fireball, which actually hits pretty hard. So you kind of want to get those guys down real quick if you can. But the big adds, first you're going to see the war bear. Now, the big thing for melee here, and really anybody, but especially melee, is he does cleave and it hits hard, so you don't want to be in front of him. You want to blow up the war bears. You're going to get same order, the one big one, and then two more after about, I think it's maybe 20, 25 seconds later. But this door is a little bit different in that once you kill the war bear, a beast shaman jumps off of the war bear, and so it's another large add. This one, the beast shaman will do a chain lightning. He'll put a hex, which is a curse, on people, and he does lightning nova totems. So another thing in common with all the doors is there's always something on the ground you need to stay out of, and for this door, it's a lightning nova totem. So basically, you're going to kill the single war bear. You're going to try and get the shaman down very quickly. The next two war bears are going to come out. You're going to kill one of the war bears and hopefully that shaman. And then you're going to get the Dynamancer is going to come out. And you need to get on him for the interrupts to keep him from healing Horrodon. He's going to, you know, get once he gets to 50%, he's going to turn into a dino and drop the orb that you click on, and Horrodon's going to run and smash the door. Now, the Lightning Nova Totem hits fairly hard, but it doesn't slow you like the third door. It hits for about 200,000 damage, and it's an 8-yard radius. So you want to stay out of that. But once you clean up that door, for DPS, it's really kind of a cakewalk. The only thing you're going to have to deal with is War God Jalak coming down, and he's going to do the AoE damage ability that he has. That's a good time to use your personal defensive cooldowns. That's also when you want to bloodlust and use any personal damage cooldowns if you haven't used them already. Because it's key he dies very fast. Once he dies, you're just beating on Horrodon, and it's a DPS race to the end. He will... we've come close a few times, I think within 5 seconds of the Enrage Timer, but we knocked him out. And you want to use your cooldowns as many times as you can. You probably get them once or twice once you're on Horrodon. They're 1-minute cooldowns.
In a pot, if your cooldowns are off and you have it available, yeah, it's probably a good addition as well.
Yep.
All right, so he'll enrage, and he doesn't do any new abilities that melee has to deal with other than the occasional charge. So, like you say, it's just a DPS race, and then you collect some loot. So we're going to move on down the way, and we're going to kill some trolls. Now, the trash along the way to the next boss is pretty much fundamentally the same way as LFR. Not too complicated. Just group up all the mobs, nuke them down, and just move on. As you progress through all that, you're going to run into a group of bosses known as the Elder Council. The Elder Council is a 4-boss council fight. Pretty much a single phase with just a multiple of abilities. And I've done this with a couple of different groups and seen several different strats. And I'm not going to say one is better than another. It can just either be simplified or made more complicated, just depending on how you want to execute the fight.
Right.
So, Arion, could you detail how your group would typically do that fight?
All right, so Troll Council, it's a council fight. There are 4 of them. It's unusual in council fights that when you kill one of the members of the council, the other ones do not heal to full HP. So that's actually pretty nice because you're not punished for cleaving. Basically, Garajal, the guy from Mogishan Volts, comes back and he's going to empower one of the adds. That add is going to do some different mechanics. I'll let the other two take care of that. They don't really affect tanking all that much. The only one that does is the High Priestess, but she's really easy. Pretty much our strat is we burn down Soul. We don't let Soul get empowered. Soul's empowerment is Soul is the Faraki tribe, Soul the Sandcrawler. He summons a giant like sandstorm and summons a bunch of adds, and then the adds poop out quicksand, and it just basically covers your room in quicksand. He covers your room in quicksand, does a bunch of AoE damage, as well as when he's not empowered, he's continuing to cover your room in quicksand, as well as doing an ability called Sandbolt that deals damage to people 5 yards in a 5-yard radius around his target. So he's pretty much just AoE damage to the maximum. And AoE damage is really, really bad to keep alive. Keeping him alive is really bad on your raid. It really stresses out your healers. Really, really stresses out your range DPS as they're just taking damage, and the damage goes up as the fight goes on, and they're just eventually going to run out of cooldowns and run out of mana and die. So we kill him as soon as possible. The way that's attained is pretty much Soul is going to stand and cast on people. He's going to melee if he's interrupted. He doesn't melee very hard. He hits about the same as a normal, just level 93 mob. Nothing too extreme. So like a plate DPS can easily tank him. But we bring Frost King. We drag him across the room and stack him on Soul. So the tank is tanking Frost King as well as Soul. And the other tank goes over, gets aggro on Mariel. Mariel only casts on you, does not cast. Doesn't do anything but cast unless she's interrupted, and then she'll run at you. So what we do is we interrupt her and run her away from the group. The reason we do that is she summons an ad that if the ad hits the boss, it heals the boss. So giving us as much time to get our DPS to switch from the bosses to the ad and kill the ad before it gets to the boss is always a nice thing. So we just run her away, and then that tank is just getting casted on, so he just runs back in and starts DPSing on the kill target, being Sol. At a certain point, Frost King is going to do something called Frigid Assault. Basically, he empowers his weapons to start stacking a debuff on your tank, as well as doing additional frost damage to your tank. Upon reaching 15 stacks, your tank is stunned for 15 seconds. It's actually unavoidable. If you hit 15 stacks, you can't break it with Bubble, you can't break it with Icebound Fortitude or anything like that that tells you you can use it during a stun. You actually can't use it during that stun. The way he only is able to get out at any given Frigid Assault if he lands every single attack 25 stacks. That means that if you're building stacks, when you hit 13 stacks, he can only put out 12 more stacks. So 12 is less than 15. 13 is less than 15. So your off tank just taunts him off you, tanks him. He's building stacks. You're no longer building stacks. You're probably going to need to use defensive cooldowns as you need to on that. That's kind of at your discretion. Pretty much the big thing is once he's building stacks on you and you hit 13, don't taunt at 11. 11 puts you too close to 14, because there's always the like awkward chance that, you know, RNG goes crazy and he actually hits 15 on you for some reason. Just go to 13. 13's safe. If you taunt at 13, there's zero chance that your other tank is going to get stunned when he taunts off of you. So that other tank taunts. Frost King's still stacked on Sol, stacked in on Sol, and then you're just going from there. Once Frost King is empowered first, once Frost King gets unpowered, based on however your raid does it, usually we do a hard swap to Frost King, push him out of his empowerment, and then another troll gets empowered. For us, it's usually the High Priestess. When that happens, when High Priestess is empowered, you want to stack all the trolls together, have one tank on Frost King and one tank on High Priestess, and you just swap stacks accordingly. It's actually, for tanking, as long as you understand that you need to be tanking Marley, who's the High Priestess, and Frost King, and you need to swap the stacks at 13. There's not all that much for you to do as a tank besides just put out as much damage as possible. The only boss you never really attack as a tank is Garajal. Garajal jumps around like Blanca from Street Fighter. It's pretty hard for a tank to run him down, especially tanking Frost King. They don't want to drag somebody around and get hit in the back. So pretty much as a tank, just stand there, tank your target, make sure you're getting your taunts off at the right time, and listen to your raid leader's instructions on where to move in the room, where he wants the ads positioned as the room gets taken up by quicksand from Sol. The real estate in the room becomes compromised, and you'll need to move around it. Make sure your melee is still able to attack your targets. The caster bombs can only be moved when they're interrupted. So if you can't, my interrupt's on a 15 second, is 15 seconds. So if I need another interrupt, I usually have to call for it. Don't be afraid to call for that second interrupt to help you move the mobs. And other than that, it's just about that taunt swap. If you get the taunt swap, then your tanking's going to be fine. But yeah, that's about it. It's pretty easy for tanks. The fact that all the bosses get stacked up together also increases your tank damage a lot, as well as your AoE.
Okay, well, we actually execute that fight slightly different, and the way I'm going to detail it is not really that different from the way he just explained. The way mobs are priority targeted are pretty much the same way. You want to nuke Sol down as quickly as possible, because avoiding the sandstorm that he does is paramount. Any group that'll do that will tell you if they're attempting to heal through sandstorms, they're making a lot of unnecessary work for themselves. The only significant difference that we do is we actually do it as a one tank approach. We have our paladin basically pick up Marley, the Frost King, and Sol and he'll tank all three stacked on top of each other. The only difference here is in a tanking method is when Frigid Assault begins to stack up on the tank, he will notify us that he has 10 stacks. So what we will do as healers is we will apply a defensive cooldown to him, like my Hand of... I want to say Hand of Salve, but that's not right.
Sacrifice?
Yeah, Hand of Sacrifice, which will mitigate some damage incoming to him, or a priest can use Pain Suppression, druids can use Iron Bark, and it'll make surviving that phase where he gets stunned very, very easy. Typically, it will not kill him as long as you have a defensive cooldown on him, and they can be easily rotated. So what he'll do is he'll stack them up, and what it'll allow is maximum cleave and splash damage on those three mobs. So what we'll do is we'll put our DPS, and I'll have my our DPS explain, you know, how this works a little more thoroughly, but they'll just focus Soul, and the tremendous amount of splash damage going on the other two targets will basically enable us to drop their health close to 50% by the time Soul dies. Now, with this going on, what we like to do is employ what we call a kind of a quadrant type setup for the range and for the healers. We'll basically put three markers out in a half moon shape around the council, allow the tank to gather up the mobs in the center of the room, and then we put a healer on one far side, a healer in the middle, and a healer on the opposite side of him, so that you can reach your tanks and reach all of your DPS, allowing people to maneuver around the sand traps. Now, Soul will apply a sand trap randomly to people, and this is a very important mechanic. If you are hit with it, it will basically apply a snare, trapping you in the quicksand. If you stand there for more than about 3 or 4 seconds, it's just going to kill you outright. Now, the entrap can be dispelled, or you can break out of it like a hunter's disengage or a mage's blink. I believe druids can shapeshift out of it. There's ways to get out of it without having to spend a dispel, but if you have to dispel yourself, just do so quickly. And then just avoid those. Also, there's a couple of abilities that are very important that'll hit the ranged DPS typically. Ranged DPS are healers. That is applied by Frost King Malik. I believe it's called Frostbite. Now, Frostbite is an ability that is kind of odd. What it'll do is it'll hit you for a tremendous amount of damage, but will hit you for significantly less if you're stacked with two other members of your raid. So three people can actually share that damage and split it so that it's not just hitting you very, very hard. So once you get Frostbite, it's a good idea to coordinate with people, such as if I get it, I would call out another healer or a DPS to move to my position. All three of us would stack together, heal through that damage while keeping an eye on the tank. Not much else raid damage is going out during that period, so it's easy to heal through while keeping an eye on our feet so we don't get a sand trap spawned under us. Soul loves to do that. He'll see three people grouped together and take that opportunity to throw a sand trap under, so you just need to be quick to move out of that. You get another ability that's very similar to Frostbite. I believe it's called Biting Cold. Now, that's just an ability that you'll just need to heal through. You don't want to stack on that. It just does tons of raid damage to people around you with a very small range. I think it's like 4 yards, 4 to 5 yards. Just separate yourself from the group, heal through it. Not a really big deal. Now, as the fight progresses on, there'll be different empowerments, and they affect the raid differently. Now, making these things very well, thoroughly known to yourself will help you in your raid tremendously. So if Marley gets empowered, you know what she'll do. You can anticipate it and be ready. Say in Marley in particular, when she becomes empowered, her lowest spirit that would once upon a time heal the group will now create a shadowed lowest spirit, and it will target a raid member. If it reaches that raid member, it's just instant death. It can't be healed through or mitigated. So DPSing that as a priority is something that'll just need to happen. So communication on that is paramount. If you're targeted, you want to just call out to the raid, such and such is targeted with a shadow low, and then your DPS will know to switch to it. Now, as far as that, the stacking for the frost, staying away from the group, on the other is pretty much all you have to do, keep an eye on your tank. He will take a tremendous amount of damage. But as the bosses begin to die off, the healing load becomes very less. It's difficult in the front end and gets better in the back end. Avoiding stuff on the ground is probably the most important thing, apart from healing your tank. And not all that challenging as far as a healer's perspective. The reason we do the one tank fight is it literally simplifies the fight. I'm going to let that DPS take over, I think, the description of how we manage our DPS priorities for that particular fight. Kumpel?
Yeah, the first thing you want to do when you do your countdown, you pre-pot, you run in, someone has to interrupt Sol. We like to group all the bosses in the middle. So getting a misdirect and an interrupt on Sol so he moves to the middle is pretty key. You don't want to blow him up until your tank has him. So we pop Bloodlust basically right at the beginning. Once the tank has aggro, you blow Bloodlust, you already have the pre-pot, you have all of your personal damage cooldowns, and you're trying to nuke Sol down as fast as possible. Now, at some point, typically we do it between 50 and 75% energy, we switch to Malak because we don't want Malak getting up over 100% energy and getting dark power out, because then it becomes really stressful on the healers. You can survive it for maybe 10 or 15 seconds. After that, it's going to be a lot of trouble. So once Malak is broken out, for us, he's either going to go to Marley or Khazra Jinn. We see it on Khazra Jinn a lot, and he's rolling around, you know, untankable, just putting lightning on the ground, and you just got to stay out of that. Just be raid aware. And the one thing that Khazra Jinn does is when he stops, and he's empowered, when he stops, he overloads. And basically, 40% of all the damage done to him is reflected back at you. And so you can kill yourself on this particular boss when he's empowered. So you have to, you know, you have to coordinate with your healers. That's a good time to pop Devotion Aura if you have a Paladin, and just ease up on your DPS. That is not the time to just go crazy and say, "Woohoo, I'm popping all my cooldowns," because you will die. So once you break him out, then you're typically going to move on to Marley. And like you detailed earlier with the Shadowed Loa Spirit, all the DPS switches to that spirit when it's popped. Kills it. It's pretty quick. It doesn't have a whole lot of health. And then you're back on her, just blowing her up. And you do want to put out as much splash damage as you can, because you want to be knocking Sol down the rest of the way if he's not dead already. It's a pretty simple fight from there. Once Marley goes down, if Sol's still up, he's going to become empowered. He's going to do the sandstorm. The trick you're going to have if he does get a sandstorm off is killing the adds and getting out of there, because when the adds die, they will drop that quicksand again, and as melee, if you're in the middle of it, that's going to be very detrimental to your health. So you want to kill Sol, knock him down the rest of the way, and then it's literally you're onto the empowered ad, whichever one's up. You know, when Khazra Jinn comes back up, I like to say, hey, you know, remember, don't go nuts, don't kill yourself, and that's pretty much the fight. It's just switching back and forth until they're all dead.
And I want to reiterate or point out, now people might be listening to this and thinking, like, how do you kill anything with Marley stacked in the middle of the group? Her Loa is obviously getting off when she's not empowered. This is a unique thing with this fight. Even though her Loa will reach that boss regardless and heal him for 5% of his health, when they're all stacked up like that, unless your group is built around just pure single target damage, the amount of cleave damage being applied by, because you, again, you only have one tank, by your melee and your range will override that heal by a massive amount. You won't even notice a difference. The mob that's getting healed, you'll still stay ahead of that by so much. It really won't matter. So you can nuke Sol down way ahead of his Sandstorm and get a big head start on the other two mobs. Like I said, Khazrajin's just rolling around all over the place. You can't really help where he goes. You just have to just switch to him when he becomes empowered, make him a priority, and then you can just switch back to the group and then just go back to just full cleave. As an indicator to let you know, because we were struggling with this fight for a little while and we couldn't figure out what we were doing wrong. And we kept going back to our World of Logs, and we were looking at groups that were geared very equivalent to where we were. And they were managing to do somewhere between 120 to 140k DPS, where our group was doing somewhere between 70 to 100k DPS. And we couldn't figure out, why are their DPS so much higher than ours? They're, you know, I would hate to imagine that they're so much better players than we are, that they're just doing things that we were not. But as soon as we went to that strat, gathered everybody up where we could get maximum cleave, now all of a sudden we're all doing 120, 130, 140k DPS easily. So basically it simplifies the fight. But whichever strat you prefer will work. You can use the two tank method. You can easily do it that way, or you can do the single tank method. But those are the tips and tricks that should get you through the fight. Now, we are running exceptionally long on the podcast today. Hopefully next week we will be able to get those raiders in and get some good details, and maybe even discuss a little bit of hard modes and take some more looks at the PTR as it adjusts and there's changes, and keep you guys updated. Have a great day, and thank you for listening.